Hello, beautiful humans. Welcome to The Shawnee Show. I'm Shawnee Suiza, your host. And today we have Kurt Camerucci, a.k.a. Floster Domus, on the podcast. If you don't know Floster Domus, he is a DJ credited with starting trap music and the entire trap movement. Such a creative, and also just as a person, Kurt is fantastic. So I can't wait for you guys to get to know him on this episode. Really, really, really pleased with how it came out. The conversation was fantastic. And even after the podcast, he stayed until, I think he stayed three or four hours after recording, just chilling with me and my sister chatting. And he's such a fantastic guy. So nice, so kind, and full of amazing stories and anecdotes. He's been around the block, really, in the DJ game, and he's also now started diving into NFTs, but he just has so many fantastic stories, really eclectic group of hobbies that I think you guys will enjoy hearing about. Beekeeping, gardening, picking wild mushrooms in Michigan every single year. We also talk a lot about his like creative process with DJing and creating sets and things like that. How the festival scene has changed. We get into a lot of things. I think you guys will really, really love this episode. Vanilla Ice performance mention story is in here as well. Touring with Chromeo. Funny story about his dad. Anyways, you got to listen to the whole thing. But before we get into that, I just want to remind you, first of all, to follow The Shawnee Show on all social media platforms. It's at Shawnee Show everywhere except for TikTok. I still have not figured that fucking out. Please, someone at TikTok, get me that handle. I beg of you. I will love you forever. Anyways, it's also at Shawnee Suiza everywhere, including TikTok. And I'm popping on LinkedIn these days. Come check me out on LinkedIn. Let's connect. Oh my God, it is too late. Okay, let's wrap this up. Quickly, our sponsor, message from our sponsor, because we got to make the big bucks, or the little bucks for now, but soon to be the big bucks, the medium bucks, the mediocre bucks, any bucks will fucking do. All right, our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball championship finals, which I think ended, the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, Major League Baseball, the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL futures. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. What? I love a 50% welcome bonus. Just use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to get the bonus and get into the action. Bet online, where the game starts. And now when the episode starts. Okay, excellent. Wow. So do you prefer Kurt or Floster Domus? Or
Kurt.
Floss.
Kurt. Not Floss. You can call me that, but I just like my name, Kurt.
Yeah. Well, Kurt's a great name, but also I guess because Floster Domus did start off as a duo,
yes.
So it's not technically just yours, right?
Yeah. Let me do some of that.
Here.
I feel like I'm going to need it.
Yeah, you are going to need it. This is what happens on the show. I end up drinking so many liquids that by the end I'm like, ah!
Might have to do a pee break.
Yeah.
You can call me Curtis too. That's another name if you want. But
oh,
whatever.
Curtis. I guess
that works. But Kurt.
Kurt is great.
Yeah.
And your last name is Camerucci?
Yes. Yeah, you said it. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Okay, I was worried I was pronouncing that wrong, but I love it. I'm not gonna lie, it does sound like a pasta. Like a really fucking delicious pasta.
It is, yes.
And I've been thinking you need to do a restaurant collab.
Oh, I should.
Yeah. Like the Camerucci like linguine or something.
Oh, I wonder who I'd do it with. Who should I collab with?
I don't know. I feel like Snoop's probably gonna get into the food game at some point. So
cannabis pasta. I think we should.
Oh, a cannabis pasta.
Yeah.
Yo, that would be really dope.
If Snoop got into it, he'd be a pastafarian. Snoop Lion.
Have you seen his DJ Snoopadelic thing?
Okay, so I saw some clips of him DJing.
So funny. So I was actually at an NFT conference in Arizona, and he played, but he didn't play as Snoop Dogg. He played as DJ Snoopadelic. And I guess also for some sort of financial, maybe tax reasons or something, it's better to play as a DJ.
Yep.
Why? Can you explain
well,
that?
Well, I don't know. I think what it is for him is probably for Snoop. I don't know. I'm speaking out of turn, but like, so when I do things, sometimes I don't DJ as Floss. I'll do different like little side things. I'll just play as like a cheaper thing and get paid under the table.
Okay.
So I feel like if he does a Snoop show where he performs, there's a set fee for that. Like there's
yeah,
whatever
it was,
it is.
It was cheaper for them.
Yeah.
To do,
so if he just does a DJ set, then he doesn't have to perform really. He can just play some songs, but be there and get maybe a little bit less of a fee, but
less work,
but still get paid. Yeah. Less work. Yeah. But if he performs, there's already a set bar that is like established in the industry. So if anyone wants to book him as a performer, that's what the price is. So I don't know.
Yeah. There was something along those lines that I think the conference then went with DJ Snoopadelic, but it was still, I mean, it was still jokes.
So does he like, did he actually perform too? Did he like kind of get on the mic and rap or something?
Yeah, a bit. He like sang verses, if you will, maybe choruses here and there, but it wasn't, oh, I just realized what's wrong. Hold on, wait.
Oh. You got, speaking of Snoop, you got hydros in your chair.
Because this desk is much higher, so if I'm working on this computer, I go.
But that's there for the placement, right? That's like the.
Yeah, but I also use it. This is what I edit on and stuff.
You could get the sit stand version.
I need to get the sit stand version, actually.
The chair stays, but the desk can alter.
Yeah, I know you're quite a hyperactive human as well. Yes. So I'm as well. Like just doing stuff and standing is so much better.
Yeah, it is.
Do you produce music standing ever?
I did for a while. I had like a sit stand desk. Like,
yeah.
I still have the frame for it. So if you want, I could give you it for this, but it's like, it's just like I had like the legs and is this a sit stand?
No, it looks like just an audio desk.
But yeah, I had that for a while, but it's just like it's weird to do it, to like stand up, like bring it up and then bring it down. I don't know how to explain it. It's just weird doing that part.
Is it electric?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It just goes
up to the top. And then, but the cool thing is with music is like, I would get into the songs a little bit more. Cause like when you're sitting, it's like so much, but I was standing up already. So then like when the music got me hype, I was working on, I would like dance around a little bit.
Also you're performing standing.
Yeah.
So in a way it's, you know,
it gets you in the mindset.
Are you still performing now? You are, right?
Yeah.
You're doing tons. So this is this considered Flostradamus round two? Is this part of that? Or is this almost like phase three?
This is phase like four of Floss.
Okay, fine. Okay, great.
Because we had like Floss 1.0. Like we started out in 2005 doing the duo thing and just DJing around the country, like just like DJing, not like really having music out. We just DJed. And then that kind of died in 2009. We weren't really getting booked as much. And then 2010 is when we started this EDM trap thing that we're like known for. And then we did 2010 to
You guys, wait, don't brush over that. You guys started trap, right? That was your whole thing.
I'm not going to say,
I mean,
Reddit says different, but I guess, I don't know. Like we're definitely one of the pioneer.
Absolutely.
Groups. Like we had like a really famous remix of a Major Lazer song that kind of like was like known as one of the biggest trap songs. It was called Original Don. I don't know what
Don,
song.
There we go. Don. I was saying
Don. I was like, wait, what? Yeah, Original Don was the like original EDM trap
song. What year was that?
That was 2011, 12.
Yeah, that was when I was raving.
Yeah.
That was
Why aren't you raving now?
That was my prime days. Well, now I'm podcast raving.
Okay.
Blast some tunes in here. Got the lights going. All right.
Yeah, did these change? Does this become a light show?
It actually can. I have gloves somewhere.
We'll add some B-roll of that later. That'd be amazing.
Okay, so you guys, so that was round like one, that was just DJing, then round 1.5, 2.
Yeah, so I would say Floss 2.0 was the EDM trap stuff, which we're known for. That was like 2.0, and that was, from like 2011, 12 till 2016, that's when Josh left. And
was amicable, right?
Yeah, kind of. Like he wanted to do his own thing, and He said goodbye, and that was it, man. I haven't talked to him since then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we kind of parted ways, and he did his thing, and he wanted to go solo. So
wow, you guys haven't bumped into each other or anything since?
No, we've played a festival, similar fest, but I don't know. I haven't seen him much. He's not really getting booked as much anymore either. So I don't know.
Mm.
But yeah, I haven't. He left in 2012. Or no, I'm sorry, 16. And then, that was it.
Pull your mic down just a little bit so we can see your face.
There we go. Show my cute face.
The short form video content. We need to see the face, says Gary V. No, I'm kidding.
Is that good? You can still hear me.
No, no, that's great.
Cool.
Okay. That's really interesting because I had just assumed, I mean, I guess being in the same spaces, although maybe he's not really into that as much anymore. Maybe dropped off.
I don't know. I can't speak for him. I have no idea.
So Floss 3... would you say was when you just started solo 2016?
Yeah, yeah, 2016 till 2021-ish. Actually, no, I'll say till like the pandemic, till like 2019. Those 3 years was Floss 3.0. And then this Floss 4.0 is kind of what I'm doing right now. And that also has a lot of NFT stuff involved, and I've been doing a lot of that. Like, throughout my whole career, I've done a lot of tech stuff with Floss. Like, I've always done weird things. Like, in 2013, we released, like, we had this, like, these lunch boxes we put all over South by Southwest.
Okay.
And they were kind of like free NFT portals that were, like, pre-NFTs, like, 2013.
Oh, cool.
So, like, we would set them all up, and it was, like, we made networks that were, like, common networks, like Linksys and Netgear and all of this stuff that people would normally connect to. And then if you went to like Facebook or you went to anything like that, it would just auto redirect always to our site. And then our site, we gave away what they call POAPs now in NFTs, but we gave away like these things you could only get at South by Southwest, like these exclusive backgrounds for your phone, exclusive music, samples. And then we also like gave like directions to all the things that we were playing at South by Southwest. So always done like tech in this Floss stuff.
That's like guerrilla marketing, yeah. Guerrilla warfare marketing.
Definitely. Yeah. I love that. I love that type of stuff. Like kind of Banksy-esque marketing stuff. So
people, I mean, a lot of people started doing that with barcodes, but then with all the scammy-yammy stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
A little more precarious these days.
Yeah.
But that, okay. So, and I mean, I think the pandemic made a new version of basically everyone. Yes, so pandemic onward was Floss 4.
Yeah.
I love what you're doing with the tech stuff. You've been coding for a long time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you explain to me, first of all, where did you learn to code? What's that whole story there?
Yeah, so I've just been a nerd first and foremost. So whether that's that nerd angle brought me to music or brought me to design, like I've always just done that before I even went to school. And I didn't know you could really do like tech stuff as a career choice. I don't know why, but I just was like, that's never a thing for me. So I went to Columbia in Chicago, and I went to school for interactive multimedia, which is like web and graphic design was my line of study. And the cool thing with that course is they taught you everything. They taught you how to produce music. They taught you how to edit video. They taught you how to code.
Cool.
They taught you how to Photoshop. It was like pretty much like everything I do now for my career was all done in this course. And yeah, I was like coding like Java, JavaScript, C++, and some nerd stuff back then. And yeah, I didn't rely on it that much, but I still like think like a coder and I think like technical all the time. So if I work on any project in the NFT space or anything, I like at least know how to speak to coders and I know how to get my idea out. But like for me sitting there crunching code, I barely do that anymore. Like I'm like too busy DJing and doing these other things for that.
Yeah, I can relate to that a lot. I did the UCLA coding bootcamp.
Oh, sick. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a good 4 months of my life. That was actually during the pandemic.
Oh, how was it? Like, would you recommend that to other people?
I would. I really liked it. I thought it was very practical and super useful. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would ever go into coding. I'm trying to get away from computer work. I don't know that I'm built for it. My hands are so weak on like I just can't sit at a desk for too long and typing and all of that. So I don't know that I'm really built for it. But like you were saying, being able to speak to developers and at least understand the language, it's a whole other ballgame. Like you put yourself at a much higher level of being able to actually get something done in an efficient manner.
Yeah.
You know, even just explaining, there's so many people who go into tech, right? And a lot of times just explaining the basic things to the developers, they don't really understand how to talk to them.
Yeah.
So they're speaking in a completely different language or coming from, let's say a designer, you learn design, but you also learn coding. So if you're working with a team and you're designing on the other end, you know what kind of can and can't work. Mm-hmm. A lot of times designers will send somebody something and it's like, what the fuck?
Yes, I know exactly
what the fuck
mean.
Do you mean? Oh, you want this to just like float and then fly off and then do this and whatever. It's, you know, it's not the same sort of wavelength. So I do feel like because of that, I'm excited for the option to work in different tech spaces and be that sort of translator, if you will.
That'll be good for you. Like, especially if you understand it, you it might even, I don't know, I can't speak for you, but the class might have even like had your brain think a little bit differently. So maybe you can have concepts.
Oh,
concepts.
Yeah.
I can't say the word.
Concepts.
Concepts. You can have concepts and make those concepts into NFTs. The funny thing is when you were just talking, I was thinking about it, but like coding is translation kind of. So like if you have to like translate to a developer and then they have to translate that to code and then that code has to be translated. It's just a bunch of translations happening.
Yeah. Well, it's languages, right?
Yeah.
Each coding, you know, it's JavaScript is a language.
Yeah.
So you're translating from English to JavaScript and let's say you have to change your entire project to React, then you're translating to React.
Yes.
So it's a whole, you know, everything is a language and it's the same. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the same thing as learning language, but it's very fucking similar.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I guess it depends on the language, but some are more or less complex. But yeah. It is cool, especially coming into the NFT space. Do you feel like you have a leg up talking to these teams that are working on your projects?
I think so. At least I have like a leg up conceptually, as I said a minute ago, but like I can just like think about things in a way. I think a lot of times when people want to get into NFTs, I was talking to a friend earlier about it, or any sort of tech in general, let's not even say that, any sort of tech, there's like a roadblock that happens.
Yeah.
And then for me, I can at least like think big in this space because I know what's possible. So for me, it just like helps me be like, oh yeah, this can happen. I just need to like tell it to somebody that can actually make it happen.
Right.
So sometimes people don't even think it can happen because it's just like so complex. I don't know.
Yeah. You know what the possibilities are. So you can ask for them essentially.
Yeah. I can kind of like piece it together enough for them to be like, hey, this is like almost like with sticks and glue and stuff and be like, see, this is kind of what I want. They're like, oh yeah, I understand that. And then they can make it nice and polished and stuff.
What language are most of these smart contracts being written in? I never understood that aspect of it. I never actually went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, so there's Rust, which is like a lot of stuff in Solana. It's called Rust.
Okay.
Which is like I guess it's like partially Java or JavaScript. I don't know. Someone's going to write in the comments and hate on me. And then the Ethereum is in, why can't I think right now? Ethereum is in... Here, actually, someone put it in the comments. How about that? Yeah, we'll have them put it in there.
Oh, this is great for engagement.
Yeah.
Guys, listen to Kurt.
How about that? Yeah. We'll problem solve live together. Someone write what the Ethereum contracts are written.
I have actually always been curious because I didn't know if it was anything that I would even know or if it was something completely, you know, off the tracks, like a whole other new language.
What did you learn in your class?
We did like a full stack. So I did... like JavaScript, HTML, CSS, what else was on the front? And React, was like the front. Yeah. And then we did the back end also. So we did like Mongo, Node, MySQL.
Yes, I was wondering if you did SQL.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we did basically everything. I can't think of all of them right now, but we had like a crazy, our stack was like super long. It was pretty insane.
Was it confusing or were a lot of them similar? Because some of those I don't even know like what they're like.
I mean, I think it came down to learning a variety of things that you could use, all the different tools, and then figuring out what you like the most. Yeah. I connected a lot with React. I thought it was just a much more simplified way of being able to handle like anything that I wanted to handle. Like I loved working with it. I thought it was so much easier. I came in knowing HTML and CSS.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And like MySpace.
I was going to ask you. So many people of probably our generation were.
Oh, yeah.
MySpace was like the thing that like got people to code. It really was.
I had a website. A picture of Christina Aguilera and Eminem on it. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it changed the background color. Like it was so just rudimentary, but there was that. So it got complex once we started doing the back end and having to deal with like just sending shit to different directions. And I was like, oh my God, you have to keep everything organized. But I did the front end. I have a pretty good grasp on.
Even with you doing the CSS and the HTML from back in the day, like the front end stuff is just kind of easier to understand.
Yeah, and I'm a more visual person anyways, so that kind of relates more.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're more of an auditory learner?
No. Well, hold on. Yes. visual and auditory.
Okay.
Like, so I'm a 100% visual learner and visual. I can describe things. Like if I draw it out, I'm so good with visual. Even when I make music, there's like even some stuff I'll do visually. Like I'll even not even hear it and just know what it looks like. And I don't know. It's very visual first, but to answer your question, yes. Auditory learner, like podcasts have like been the biggest. It feels like in the Matrix when like Keanu gets plugged in and they're like, oh, I know Kung Fu, like listening to podcasts and like YouTubes, just listening to YouTubes. Mm. It just is like so educational. I'm always learning auditorily. So
what's your favorite shows? What do you
on podcasting?
Yeah.
Radiolab is my kind of my number one. Like I love Radiolab. This American Life, cause I'm from Chicago and I've always just like, it was on the radio growing up and I love that. And then Joe Rogan. He just always has really cool guests on. So I'm a big Joe Rogan fan too.
Yeah. Show's one of the reasons I got into podcasting.
That's cool.
So many. I've been listening to him since 2012.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah.
Like on and off. Like I was casual at first, got more into it. Now I've fallen off because it's hard to do podcasting and listen to podcasts.
I was wondering. I was wondering.
It's kind of, I don't know. It's not. It's like being a barista and then just making tons of coffee at home.
Mm-hmm.
Not always what you want
to
do.
It's so true. Some people, like even my fans, would be like, "Yeah, so when you go home, you're just like turning up, listening to trap." I'm like, "No, I am not. I'm like, I want like the chillest, ambient, most relaxing music at home." Yeah. And like, even when I go listen to music or if I listen to a DJ, it's like you can't. You enjoy it on a different level because you understand it. I'm sure for podcasting, it's the same too. You're like listening in a critiquing way, kind of, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Comedians have that same thing too.
Oh yeah.
Where they'll just be kind of be in the back, but they're not really laughing out loud.
Yeah.
They don't really laugh out loud. Cause I mean, you're listening to stand up 24/7.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's insane. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. Okay. You have so many interests that I have to ask you about.
Yeah.
Like so many just fun oddball interests, like beekeeping. Please
yes.
talk to me about beekeeping. How did you get into that? And what?
Okay, cool. So yeah, the pandemic got me into a lot of things.
This is new.
It's somewhat new. I mean, the pandemic has been going on for a long time. We're just coming out of it.
I feel like it just started.
Yeah, seriously. It's wild.
Smallpox round two.
I know.
Fuck that shit.
I've been... The funny thing is that when like we started coming back as of recent, like within the past 3 or 6 months or whatever, like I have all these other projects I want to do now. And I'm like, can we just get locked down again so I can get this stuff done?
Same.
Like I just want to have another lockdown.
People need to stop asking me to go to events. The answer is no.
Seriously. There's too much going on now. Maybe we should, well, growing up in the Midwest, it snows for like 8 months out of the year. So we kind of have these mini lockdowns that happen in a sense. Like you don't want to go anywhere. It's like dead winter.
LA could use a winter.
That's what I'm saying. We need something like that out here. We need to have some sort of
fucking genius. Yeah. Let's call some people. I feel like we can make some snow happen.
We'll definitely, let's do a lab leak part two. Let's make it happen. Mm, we'll go.
I really like this. Okay. So beekeeping.
Yeah. So back to beekeeping. Yeah. So it was a pandemic. I got into gardening first, did that.
Okay. Is that the weeds that you grow on your roof?
Yes. I grow some weeds on my roof. I've got those. And I should have brought you some of those too. That's a whole other thing. So yeah, I grow the weeds on my roof. I grow all sorts of like vegetables, like watermelon radishes, like of course, tomatoes, peppers. I have like every fruit tree.
Oh my God. I have to come check out your garden one day.
No, you should.
I love gardens.
Oh, come over.
Yeah. I'm
please,
a huge fan.
Please.
Oh my God. I love that. Yes,
I have like
yes.
every fruit tree. I have the brown avocados, like the California ones, but I also have Florida avocado tree, which is the green ones.
Oh, so the Haas avocados. Yeah, Haas. And then what's the long ones?
I call them Florida avocados. They're the green ones.
Yes.
Like
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And then I have blood oranges. I have the cutie oranges.
Nice.
I have pink lemons, regular lemons. These things called finger limes or caviar limes. When you cut them open and squeeze them out, it looks like caviar, but it's lime.
You have more options in the farmer's market.
Oh, I'm good. And so to go back to beekeeping, during the pandemic, I just built this whole compound. So I was like eating all the vegetables and fruits and all the things that I was growing. Nice. And so I had a composter. I put a composter in and I'm throwing compost in this thing so I can make my own soil.
Does it make the compost for you, or do you have to like turn it and layer it and stuff like
so
that?
So that's what it's like. It's a drum. It's almost like the Price is Right wheel in a sense, but it's
like a hamster wheel thing.
Yeah, yeah. But it's big, and you put the compost in, and then when you put it in, then you rotate it, and it keeps kind of stirring, and then it makes soil over time.
Oh, got it.
You put
this
like fungus in it that breaks it down.
Yeah,
so
cool.
I had that. I was doing it, and it had been like, I don't know, like a month or so since I had been putting compost in it. And one day I'm out in my yard doing work, whatever. I have my shirt off, whatever, doing all that. It's important I have my shirt off for this.
We'll put B-roll of that too.
just do that. Slow-mo B-roll of me just shirtless. Please use someone else's body for that though. Don't show the face.
CGI.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't show, just put some B-roll in of a hunk saying it's me. And then
we'll have to go shoot that. Okay, great.
Oh, so I was out there shirt off. Here we go. Insert shirt. And then shirts off and I go and I open up my composter to throw the compost in and just all these bees come out.
Oh shit.
Thousands of bees come out and they were like kamikazing at me, like flying at me, like and hitting me. And then I've learned this since then, but once one bee stings you, they put a pheromone on you and then all of the bees are like, this is who we sting. So I'm running across my yard shirtless and I'm like going into my house. I'm like, oh my God, I have like all these bees. I have to do something with them. And I was like, I'm not going to kill them. You're not supposed to kill bees, apparently. Like,
no, it's really bad. Bees. I feel so, I always try and save any bees I see
dying.
Yeah,
save the bees, for real. So yeah, that's what I was like, I'm going to save these bees. So I just went on Google, went on YouTube again, auditory learning. I went on YouTube and like saw a couple beekeeping videos and figured out what it was. I ordered off Amazon this beehive thing and I painted it. I made it look like my house. I made it all cute. Went in the back where the bees were with my new bee suit that I had, cut out the old honeycomb, and then I transferred it to this new house that they had, and then they all moved. They left my composter.
Was it like those, you know, those houses where they have the little shelves and you pull them out? Yeah, is that what it is?
Yes.
So how did you transfer the honeycomb into that? Because the honeycomb grows in like a weird shape,
it
right?
It does, yeah. It does. It grows in, it's pretty like uniform in rows in a kind of, in a way.
Oh,
but
interesting.
I just like cut it out with a kitchen knife, and then it had these, it was giant sections that were like, I don't know, 2 feet or so.
Okay.
And then I just put a couple of those combs in there, and then I put those frames that you're talking about next to it, and then they just kind of went from those combs and started to fill out the rest of the frames.
Oh.
It's pretty cool.
Okay. So interesting. Yeah. I can't believe, so you didn't even like seek out to go and buy a bunch of bees and beekeep.
No.
You literally had a family of bees that, that found you.
Yes, they found you.
That's crazy.
And instead of gentrifying them out of my neighborhood, I kept them there and yeah, we're good.
This is a much better story than I was even expecting. I mean, I thought it was going to be fantastic, but that's so cool. Yeah. What a fun like twist. Most people would see that and they'd think that they'd have to call someone to get them out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, I wanted to save them. And I also like, I love just learning things and like understand, I don't know. I'm just a very
New things.
Yeah. I just love it. And this was a new opportunity and I was like, cool, I can get some honey out of it, which I did. Mm. I've harvested it. It was just
that
cool.
Honey must be amazing.
It's so good.
Wow.
It's so it, like, I listed all the fruit trees that I have. So like how the, this is kind of some nerd honey facts, but the honey gets made like in rows over the season. So it starts out, my avocados blossom, then it's avocado honey, then it's citrus blossoms, and then it goes into like wildflowers. So the whole, throughout the season, the honey flavor changes from avocados to wildflowers.
Interesting, because of what they're, what's it called? Pollinating?
Yeah, pollinating. Yeah. They, but they like actually eat the pollen. They, this is kind of nasty, but honey is like actually them spitting it back up. They
I've
like
heard that. It. It's their vomit, right?
Yeah, it's the vomit. It's bee vomit. It's kind of nasty,
it's
but
fucking delicious, yo. They have the best vomit
they
in the world.
Do. I would
in the world. Like, wow. I
mean, you've eaten a lot of vomit, I'm sure.
I will, yes. I've sampled vomit globally. Oh, Richard, did you hear about the bee vomit?
Yep.
Excuse you.
Richard in the building.
We might have to let him come say hi or he's just gonna, oh wait. Maybe he's going. Are you off? Oh, he's off. Okay. I think he's going for a walk. Hi, I brought him back from Israel.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Tell us about this.
Yes. My
talk
my
about rescuing animals.
So, okay. Well, it's actually really sad because basically I killed a cat driving in the road. Oh. And I've been a vegetarian since I was 7 years old. And it was the most traumatizing experience feeling the cat go, and it was slow. It wasn't like I killed it fast. It was it was horrible. But then from that moment, I was like, what can I do to help all the animals everywhere all the time?
Okay.
So I went and started volunteering for some organizations. And then I got Richie. He needed help. So I fostered him. And then now it's like 4 years later.
Did you meet him in Israel? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. He was living with me there for like six. Yeah. So I lived there for six years and he was there for the last like 6 months.
Cool. And did you kill the cat in Israel too?
Yeah. I killed the cat in Israel.
Oh my
God. There's a lot of street cats in Israel.
Yeah.
And it was on the highway. Anyways, so it's a cool, sad, good story.
No, it's good.
Honestly,
it's
also, the cat probably would have been dead by now anyway.
Are you part of like an organization that's actually true? At least four of its lives would be gone
for
by
sure,
now.
For sure.
Are you bringing other animals back or like, are you like connected with them in any way to help out?
Not anymore. I was doing a lot of dog rescue stuff when I first moved back to LA. Yeah. I helped this woman, Jack, to the rescue. I was editing her videos and like helping with some of the fundraisers. Yeah. It was really fun. I really liked it. And we did some, spay and neuter clinics out in East LA where they just, there's so many. I'm oh my God. Sure. It's crazy. San Bernardino area just is. There's so many that go into the shelters every single day. It's impossible. It's like a system that can't really.
Do they just like get pregnant as soon as they get in there or something? Or what?
It's a lot of, no, a lot of them don't spay and neuter their dogs because it costs money, but it's also, there's also a thing of like a lot of people don't believe in it.
Yeah.
And I've also done research on it to the extent where I'm not sure if that's necessarily the right route for every single animal.
Okay.
there's a lot out there that disagrees with spaying and neutering certain animals. So I don't know. There's so much there. It's like a really nuanced conversation, but I did do that. But I would like at some point, once I have more time, definitely get back involved.
That'd be cool. Have them be a sponsor of the podcast, maybe.
They have no money, but I will sponsor. I will mention them for free anyways.
It'll be like a Sarah McLachlan like commercial at the end of this.
Oh my God. Like a serious freak. I should actually edit a short form to me talking about the cat dying.
Put my shirt off in there, please. Just like a random cut up.
Yeah. Great. Don't worry. We'll mint that as an NFT after.
Yes, please.
Fucking hilarious. Okay. So beekeeping, the gardening. And then I saw you posted this thing to your stories one day about harvesting wild mushrooms.
Yes. Oh yes. You saw that.
Can you please elaborate?
Oh my goodness. It's weird when you're like listing it all in front of me. I don't think about it all, but
I know I do. Listen, I like to do a significant amount of research on my guests to the point where they maybe slightly are uncomfortable.
No, I like it. It's very Nardwar-esque. I'm liking this.
Oh,
he's
on this list because I know you've been interviewed by him as well. Yes.
You're up there though. This is good.
Thank you.
So I grew up in Michigan. That's where I was born. My family still lives there.
Right. What's the town called? It's a funny
Kalamazoo.
Name. Yeah, Kalamazoo. Yeah, just such a great name.
So I grew up just outside of Kalamazoo in like the countryside. And
oh, you're Kalamazoo adjacent?
Adjacent, yes. So I'm Kalamazoo. I can't even say that. That's a tongue twister. So there's every year there's like seriously like 1 or 2 weeks that you can get these mushrooms. They're called morel mushrooms. And so they're really tasty, they're really decadent, and they're really hard to like produce like on a farm scale. Mm. So like you kind of have to go to the woods to find them. And I don't know how to explain it, but there's something about it that it's nostalgia for me is one of the things. Cause I used to do it with my dad and my brother. And like, we always grew up and went to the woods, but there's also something about how rare they are. Like it's hard to find them. And if you find one, if you see one, you're like, oh, you have to stop and like scan around. And there's probably like 4 or 5 other ones around where the one is. So it's just, I don't know how to explain it. There's these little gifts that you get for free. And to me, it's always been like a fun thing. And I'm like really big into mushrooms in general. I mean, that's what this stuff is. We'll talk about it.
But, yeah, guys, we'll get to that.
Yeah, like mushrooms are just I don't know. They've always been fascinating to me as like a young kid to an adult. And this is just like a thing that I do every year. I go and forage mushrooms and it's fun. Mm. So that's what that was. That was my story. I forgot I even posted that.
Yeah. So, okay. So you do that yearly. That's a yearly
thing.
Yeah,
I try to. Like I said, it's only 1 week.
Yeah.
Or 1 or 2 weeks of the year. So if I can make it home, it's always around Mother's Day, which is nice. So I get to see my mom.
Nice.
And get some mushrooms.
Pick some mushrooms. Yeah. They're not psychedelic, right? They're just delicious.
Yeah. They're just delicious.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
It. That's all that they have.
Yeah. I mean, I also love delicious mushrooms. Yeah.
There might be some, but yeah, you don't trip at all.
I like all mushrooms equally. To be honest.
That's so nice.
So do you know, I mean, I guess you're into gardening, so you probably do know like the differences between the different mushrooms, like the lion's mane and the little like thin ones and whatever. Yeah. Like there's such fun ones. Whenever I go to the farmer's market, I love buying them.
I mean, I don't know that much. Like I couldn't, like there are certain ones I can see and I kind of can identify or I know what they'll do. Like I don't know the names of them, but there's this one that like, if I see it, I know what it is. I can cut it. And when you cut it in half, it's yellow and it instantly turns blue.
Ooh.
Like the oxygen or something makes it go blue instantly. It's really cool. In front of you.
It oxidizes right
there.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Whatever the chemical is in it that does that. So there's certain ones I'll be like out with friends. I'm like, oh, check this out. And I'll pick one and cut it and show them. But I'm not like a big nerd where I'm like, this one does this and this. And like, I know a little bit with like lion's mane, of course, is good to like, good for your brain.
Right.
Helps you grow. There's this, I'm going to nerd out, but there's this thing in your brain called your myelin sheath that actually degrades over time.
Okay.
It's kind of what causes Alzheimer's and things like that. It actually it's one of the things that degenerates just like your muscles. But lion's mane has been known to actually regrow that back. So you can kind of stay sharp. You won't forget as much. So
that is very important for me, who is an avid stoner.
Oh yes.
fight back.
You get really high and eat some lion's mane. You're good to go.
Lion's mane. That's the one that, people say is like a natural Adderall, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. I would classify it. Like if you mix it with other things, that's a cool thing. There's this thing called an entourage effect with a lot of things. Like even weed has an entourage effect. Like I'm sure you've smoked one type of weed and it made you really stony and maybe one more high.
Yes.
A lot of times people think it's just indica and sativa, but there's actually other chemicals that are involved creating an entourage effect. And that's the same thing with mushrooms. Like you can actually mix two different mushrooms together, like cordyceps and lion's mane, and then there's benefits of those.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. To create. Are you saying entourage?
Yes. What did I say? Entourage.
No, because I wasn't.
I'm Midwest. So
I wasn't sure if you were saying entourage, like entourage, or entourage.
Entourage. I'm not that
like a science word. No, I didn't know if it was a science word.
No, it's
an entourage.
Entourage.
Because so many things are coming together, right? That's the entourage. So yes. Got it. Yes, oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Thank you for correcting me. I have a weird Midwest accent. I say
things. It's only weird if you're not Midwest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And every accent is weird. When you're not,
yes,
you know, like,
yeah, no, I
like
know.
The British people think, and you know, everybody else, but no, yeah,
I understand.
I think the California accent is very common on TV, like it's very prevalent in media, at least it always has been. And so, I feel like that maybe leaks into the bias, like people understand us more slightly because so much media is produced in this kind of accent.
I like that,
you know what I mean?
I could think that, yeah.
Even like the movie The Help? I was watching that with a couple of British friends. They couldn't understand anything because the Southern accents.
Really?
Wait, was it The Help or was it something else? Was that the movie that was really Southern? I can't remember if the accents were really strong. There was a movie that we were watching that had a really strong accents, and they, although I didn't find them that strong, but they found them really, they were like, I can't understand anything.
And then even like they have like the Northern, like the Cockney stuff. And it's
the Geordie accent, Newcastle.
Oh, I don't even, yeah.
That's like a whole, try watching Geordie Shore.
Oh, Geordie Shore. Oh yeah. I think I saw a clip of that. Yes.
Such a, wow. That's such a crazy show. Okay. So speaking of Nardwar, he's one of my, I just love the guy.
Yeah.
What a legend. He's so freaking cool. And you got interviewed by him way back in like 2014.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? You were there in person, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, one thing I want to say about Nardwar, which is, well, so he does a radio show at the local college in Vancouver. And my friends had the radio show slot right before his. So I would go do their radio show anytime I came to Vancouver, like back in 2005 or six. And there was this dude there who was Nardwar who would come in, but he wouldn't be Nardwar that much. Like at first, before the microphone turned on, he was like this very shy, like the voice wasn't there. And he was just like, oh, hey, how are you? Whatever, like kind of very introverted or whatever. And then seriously, as soon as the on-air sign went on, he turned into the Nardwar that we know. He like, it's a full character side of himself that comes out.
Wow.
He went from being like so not animated to just being this animated, like from like being a human being to a cartoon in like 1 second. It was so cool. But as for the interview, I've always wanted to be interviewed by him. Like that was like a, it's definitely one of the bucket list things, and I'm, knock on wood, very fortunate to be. But he was pulling stuff out that I have no idea how he gets his information. Even
I need to know if he has a team researching. I just need to know, like, is that him doing that?
Because I, through my friends who have the radio station and stuff, I'm like, who's helping him? Who's his intern? Who's around? And like, no one knows anything. Like, he keeps it pretty under wraps. It's so wild. But he can find the deepest stuff. I did a public access TV show when I was in high school.
Flow Zone?
Yeah, the Flow Zone, yeah. I did that in high school, and there's like no evidence of it anywhere, really. And he
found it.
He found it.
That's just insane. It's insane to me what he pulls out, but I guess as a musician, that would be such a bucket list thing.
Yeah.
You know, like being interviewed by Nardwar is so cool.
It's so awesome. And like, as a fan too, I love watching his shows too, because he pulls out all of this stuff that people aren't even ready for. And you get to see these artists, these people you look up to, whatever it is, whoever he's interviewing, become a human being on camera, which I love. Because a lot of people like are interviewed and they have their little whatever they do on camera. But they're doing that for a little bit, especially the rappers, and then they get broken and they just become themselves. And you get to see the real side, which I love. They almost become children in a way. It's cool.
Because he lights up a part of them that ignites memories from that time.
Yes.
And a lot of times these people are coming on, especially the caliber of people he's interviewing, they're coming on prepped. They're media ready. They're media savvy. They have PR teams. They know what you people are going to ask, because a lot of people aren't coming with creative questions. Yeah. How did you start in music? Da, 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 da. He throws at you things that are just like, what? And then all of a sudden, you see their face glow and light up. It's, as an interviewer, it's one of my goals. Like, it's such a phenomenal thing to be able to do, because it really does break down those barriers. Yes. They become human on camera.
Yes.
Such a good way to put it. I love that you said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's cool. So what was the experience like? How did, who contacted you to be on the show?
I mean, it was a while ago, so I don't know all of that. I just remember we were in Vancouver playing. There was a festival up there.
Okay.
Pemberton Fest or something. There's some, or maybe it was Mad Decent Block Party, which was one that we did a while. I think it might have been Mad Decent Block Party Vancouver, but we were in Vancouver at the time, and that's where he lives. Mm. And somehow it was like we got the call or the email or whatever it was, and I was like, it almost seemed unreal. I was like, no way. And they're like, yeah, there's this weird, we're gonna do it in the conference room of the hotel that we were staying. It was just like all this, it just was so set up, and it was last minute too. It happened like really quickly. So like, I almost didn't even know what to expect. Like, and that's why I think I was even more shocked when he was coming up with some of those questions. So.
Yeah, that's cool. I wonder if he does schedule a lot of things last minute for that very reason.
Oh, good call. He does all the research, gets it ready, yeah. And then knows that they're coming. Ooh.
Yeah, I could see that. It's nice to spring that kind of stuff on people because I feel like they are less prepped for it. Mm-hmm. So you guys didn't do that in a studio. That was at some conference room?
Yeah, it was like in the random conference room at the hotel.
Man, what a legend. That is so cool.
He does. I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of his interviews are in the weirdest locations.
Place. He's always like some. But I'm surprised that he didn't do it in a studio if he's in Vancouver.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's the thing. We didn't I don't know if he's ever done a studio interview. Maybe that's part of it. He wants people to be like, I don't know.
In a neutral spot or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen the weirdest locations, like sneaker stores, and that's just like weirdest backdrops where people are. So
yeah, he does have a lot of weird backdrops with that.
I want to see someone interview him.
I would love to interview Nardwar. I'd love to be interviewed and interview him. Like, that would just be such an incredible. There's something so spectacular about interviewing people who either A, have never been interviewed, mm-hmm. or B, are interviewed nonstop.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a person who's interviewing people nonstop, but never being interviewed. It's like a really weird dynamic. I would just love to be able to ask him questions.
Especially if you could dig up things about him. Like, if you could find out some like crazy facts.
I'm calling every member of his family.
Oh my goodness.
I'm getting every single fact I can think of. Just whip out like random records for yes, him. Exactly. And, like, VHS tapes. And,
he would love that.
A floppy disk of like something just, that he did.
On these are JPEGs of you in high school. And he's like, wait, what?
It's like middle school project.
Yeah, it's a Word doc, a half typed Word doc.
Oh my God. That would be so, it'd be funny if I'm interviewing him as Nardwar, or is it going to be him as him?
Oh yeah. What's his real name? Does anyone even know that?
I don't even know. I don't think I've actually ever looked it up, but yeah, he's so dope. That is really cool. So he asked something during his interview that I thought was really fascinating, which the Vanilla Ice performance.
Yes.
Can you please like go into that story a bit more? I don't feel like you guys elaborated enough on that.
I totally forgot to even ask about that.
Like, so it was just a little quick, you know, but I need more. How did that come to be?
So I used to be a rave DJ in like the very first incarnation of rave. So like the late 90s, I used to play like drum and bass or jungle. It was called jungle back then. And so I used to be a scratch DJ and play jungle. And so
what's a scratch DJ is when you have like actual records?
Yeah, records. And you're almost doing like a guitar solo like, type thing. Like, yeah, for DJs. It's like the DJ guitar solo. But I used to do that. My whole DJ sets were like scratching and like, I don't know, like doing a lot of performance up there.
Fun.
Yeah. As like a teenager, I was like, that's what I want to do. But as I got older, it was different. But so I was doing that. I was like hired to play some rave in just outside of Chicago, like Hammond, Indiana or something like that. And they had Vanilla Ice had like fallen off for a little bit. Like this was the late 90s. So it was probably like 98 or 99, but he had probably, you know, his last big song might have been that song on the Ninja Turtles soundtrack. I don't know. Like, no one had heard from him for a while.
Right.
And so they like threw him on this thing as like one of the headliners. Like, it was like all these rave DJs and then Vanilla Ice.
Oh, like the return of Vanilla Ice, yeah, kind of a
exactly.
vibe.
No, interesting. It was.
Interesting.
And so I don't know if I said this in that interview, but I used to design flyers to be able to DJ at these parties. So like I designed the actual flyer for that rave and I still have it, which is kind of
God,
funny.
That is some teenage shit. Like, here, let me work for you double.
Yes. No, I did. Oh my goodness. I worked so hard for this company. Never got paid. Was always promised to get paid. Never got paid.
Ugh.
But it was cool because it like...
Still got you out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'll even say that as advice to like people starting out right now. Like it put me in the right rooms. I got to meet people. I also got to perform at this thing that maybe I wouldn't have had the opportunity to. Mm. I used one of my talents, which was design at the time, to hopefully showcase another one of my talents. And that's even...
Wait, how old were you at that
point? I was 16, 17.
Yeah. And you already knew how to do design? Did you know how to code back then?
Both of those were still primitive. I was learning.
Okay.
So like these little...
So it was early days, little flyer. Yeah.
The flyers and stuff were like a ways for me to teach myself design kind of.
But I guess back then it wasn't accessible.
No.
Now we have 1,000 different apps.
Yes.
But being able to actually do some sort of design work back then was far more complex. Yes. It wasn't a canva.com, you know?
Yes. Oh my goodness.
You know, some sort of like Photoshop app or whatever on your phone. We didn't have that. What were you using?
Yeah. I was using like Photoshop 4, and I want to age myself just so people know, like this was 1998. It was.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 40. I'm 40 years old. So
you're 40.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. You're welcome. Cause
Shout
you
out
really
mushrooms.
Guys, the trick.
Yeah. It's mushrooms.
That's,
it might be.
That's crazy. You really do look much younger.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And even after all this like hard touring on me, I'm still kind of a little youthful. So
I know that's shocking too. Yeah. You would think that you'd be like much more worn out. I mean, it's like decades
on the inside. Yeah. The outside looks great. The inside is
just
rust
dead.
And yeah, just pipes. Like, and like, yeah. But yeah, I'm 40. I was like teenager in the late 90s doing this. And so, yeah, it was like early Photoshop 4.
Yeah.
I don't even, it was like early Photoshop.
What and computer were you using? Was it Colorful Max or?
No, this was right before the Colorful ones or maybe around the same time. But okay. I was actually using probably a PC, probably a Gateway PC. They had like these cow themed PCs.
The little tiny button in the middle
little nipple,
for the mouse,
the
like eraser thing.
Yes, it was. It was a straight up number two eraser.
It was a eraser. Yes. It was legit an eraser. It was so weird. Why did we have
those? Diddle this thing. And then
my dad bought my cousin one of those laptops and I'll never forget it. It was like, he was freaking out. He's like, you got me a laptop? Laptop, and it was so weird.
Yeah, I don't understand
the mechanism of using that.
I wonder if they make like a USB one. I want to get one back for 2022.
Like then. Another like a different trackpad. Yeah, instead. But it's just a like a nipple. Little nub. Oh my god, that's hilarious. Yeah.
And that's how I became successful.
That's so great.
Yeah. So what was, designing that
flyers, designing Photoshop 4.
Photoshop 4. And so kind of part of like what got me super into tech was I wanted these design software programs and stuff, but I was a broke high school kid. I didn't even get paid for the rave I was playing. So like, it was hard for me to do this. So I was like torrenting programs, or at the time it wasn't even that. It was like IRC chat. You would go into these chat rooms. I don't even remember. And you'd have to like get a IP address and like put it in this thing and download.
Was this before LimeWire?
It was pre LimeWire.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. When LimeWire came up, it was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This
it
is
changed
like,
everything.
Oh,
oh my
but
God.
It did. It that definitely changed like the music industry. All of so many things.
LimeWire completely made me a procrastinator as well.
Yeah.
Downloading all this fucking shit, watching everything.
Yes.
We didn't have YouTube, we didn't have streaming services.
Yeah.
Kids don't know.
They
we had to sit there and download.
It's weird because it makes you, like having to work for anything, whether it's a significant other, whatever, like it makes you appreciate it a lot more.
Mm.
Even eating pistachios, it makes you appreciate,
like
eating
a shelled pistachio.
Yeah, just like, it's just a little bit of work and then it makes you enjoy it. And the same thing with LimeWire and stuff. There's a little bit of like, it was easier, but it was like a little bit of struggle, but you're still like discovering things. And to tie it into the mushroom thing earlier, like I loved going in the woods and like finding these like mushrooms that like no one else has. It's like, it's an exclusive thing. Same with LimeWire. It was
one
like,
of one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like pre-NFT kind of stuff too. And it was like, oh, I'm going to scour the internet. I got this weird live Dave Matthews band cover of a BC Boys song or something. It was like, it was just really cool. There was like all of this like uniqueness and you had to struggle for it. And then when you had it, it meant so much.
Mm.
And then were you part of the generation that burnt on CDs or no?
Yeah. Oh my God. I burned so many. Like that was like our whole thing. I used to, you know, those like stacks that the CDs would come on.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We had so many of those all around the house and everything was like lost and mixed up. We still kind of do. Cause my mom's car in Israel only takes CDs.
What?
Yeah. That's awesome. Like we live in another time over there. She lives in like the North, very small town.
Oh, cool.
It's very like hipster. She's also an artist.
Oh,
she painted that.
Oh, dope. I saw some of the paintings when I came in too.
Yeah, this is these are my sister.
Oh, dope.
But then my mom is also wildly talented. Yeah. So she so we still burn some CDs for her car now, which is so fucking cool. Hilarious to me. But yeah, we definitely burn CDs. We burn floppy disks too, but those died out. And then we just would open those up to like play with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Loved opening up a floppy disk.
Really?
Yeah, you break it open and then it's like a tiny little miniature CD.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was the floppy, funniest. Like, thin yes. Thing. Yeah. You just like flail it around.
Yeah. I love how you like love doing that, like destroying it. That's cool.
Yeah, there was a tech museum in Orange County where they had the inside, what are these called? Like inside of the computer, the boards.
Circuit
or something.
Board?
Yeah, exactly. And you could like twist things around and play with it. And I always thought that stuff was really fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now that you learned how to code, the next thing you can do is like the hardware side of things, maybe.
It's funny because when I was in the boot camp, I was thinking, ooh, I kind of want to learn the hardware side of
things.
That'd
be cool.
That's cool.
Are you familiar with the Raspberry Pi? Do you know what that is?
No, explain.
You should look into that. It's like a little teeny computer. It's super small, but you can like put Windows on it. You can code for it. You can kind of make it do anything. It could control these lights. It's kind of just like a simple computer that you can do anything you want with it.
So what's it called? Raspberry Pi?
Pi.
Oh, okay. Got it.
You should look into it. Like it's like a fun way of like making a computer to do whatever you want it to do. It could control the lights in your house. You can anything with it. It's cool.
Nice. Yes. I do want to control the lights in my house.
I'll send you a link.
Okay. Please. That's really cool. Everyone else should check that out too.
Yeah.
Okay. So you also toured with Chromeo.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is super fucking dope. I 100% was one of my anthems for many, many years. I would just play that all the time. I loved them. What was that like? What was that experience? And how did you get that?
Yeah. So I was on a record label called Fool's Gold, which is A-Track's record label.
Ooh, I love A-Track.
A-Track is Dave from Chromeo's little brother. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Oh my God, Heads Will Roll was also an anthem. Let's go. Yes.
I still play that to this day.
Oh my God, yes.
Shout out A-Track.
Wait, really fast. Somebody created a massive Domino's thing to Heads Will Roll. That's like one of the coolest things. I'll send that to you after. It's like a Domino's through many rooms, many bedrooms.
Oh, sick.
Crazy. Yeah, yeah.
You gotta, it's funny, like when I'm scrolling on TikTok or IG stories or whatever it is, I don't stop for the dancers anymore. I was like, all right, I'm over that phase. But the domino thing, I'm always stopping for that. Yep. I want to see where it goes. And it goes everywhere.
I love the domino
thing. They're so cool.
It actually might have been A-Track himself or themselves. I can't remember. Was it their official music video? I don't know. Anyways, continue.
Maybe it was.
It might have been.
But yeah, like so A-Track Fool's was Gold. His, yeah, Fool's Gold was his record label. And It was just funny. It was like Chromeo's big first US tour. Like they hadn't done like a full van tour. Cause like early touring, you would tour with a van. So they rented not even a Sprinter van, like a church van, like the white church vans with like the bench seats. And Dave and P of Chromeo took Josh and I out on tour as their openers. And we toured the entire US for like a whole summer.
Wow.
And it was like a summer vacation. Like it was, I don't know. We made each other like laugh. We had like, it was such a like summer vacation, summer camp vibe between all four of us. And yeah, some of the best memories, like every time I see those guys, it just feels like we're kids again. It's really cool.
Yeah. What year was that in?
2005 or six, probably six.
Oh, that was really early days.
Yeah. And it was the Fancy Footwork tour. We went everywhere. We went all over. We played CineSpace here in LA. Were you living in LA? Did you see them?
I'm born here.
Yeah. So did you ever go to CineSpace?
I don't know. I did a lot. I went to like so many different like raves and festivals and stuff. And I don't know where things were. I did a lot of the Hards.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Insomniac events.
Yeah. The Hards and stuff that were here?
Yeah. Oh, the Hards that were here. Yeah. Yeah. Like the Hard Halloween. Yes. Those were fun. Hard Summer.
Yeah.
And then EDC when it was here, and also EDC the first year was in Vegas. That was fun.
Wow, there's so many people that talked about the EDC that was here. I never experienced that.
It was 2 days or something at one point. Cool. Like that was EDC that was here was really cool, but it moved around EDC because people kept dying in different places, and so they would ban it from
that's
a
why
state.
It left here because of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was in somewhere else too. It was like they've had quite a few moves like that, but. The first year was in Vegas. We went to that. That was insane. Holy fucking shit.
I went this past year, like, or whatever, 2 weeks ago. I don't even know what it is now. And it is such an event now. There's It's so huge.
So, okay, this is actually one of the things that I rarely write out actual questions, usually just topics or whatever. Yeah. But this was one question I really did want to ask you that I've been thinking about, because you, first of all, you've been raving for so long, or like in the rave scene and in that space. And I've seen how it's changed from when I started, but you were even earlier. What do you feel like about the transformation of the festival scene and how it's kind of like it's not even really a subculture, and it's more of like a culture now. Like, what's your thoughts on that? I'm curious on your sort of firsthand perspective on how that's kind of moved.
Well, to you saying I've been raving, I barely participate in it.
Right. As in maybe not raving, but in you've yes, seen it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but no, I know what you mean.
Yeah. If anything, you have the best view.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. From going to it early on to what it is now, it's just like a huge giant production now. It's like, it became like a fun, like weekend with friends kind of energy to like an actual event. Like people will save up the entire year to go to EDC, and like this is their one time to escape and go enjoy themselves. So like, it's cool that EDC steps up or Insomniac, they step up and they actually give the fans like their money's worth. Like there's like every hour on the hour at EDC, there's a fireworks, like a full on, like huge fireworks.
Do I remember
display.
That happened? Maybe that's new.
It probably is. That's what I'm saying. Like, things are so next level. Like the production, like there's a giant fireworks show. There's like drone light shows that are like making owl, like a giant owl that flies away out of like 500 drones. And
wait,
like,
shit, I need to go to a rave again. What? I haven't been in years.
Yo, it's so next level.
Oh my God. It's that's like, crazy.
And even like the like technology.
I need to get fucked up and see that happening exactly, above my head. Yeah. That sounds insane.
It's just, maybe I was so fucked up I made that up, but it's like everything is just so next level. And even the screen technology it's cheaper. So not only can you like have more for a cheaper amount. So like the entire stages are like these high definition IMAX screens that
crazy.
Are like putting on this like wild show that goes with the audio. Like, early raves that I was playing, it might have been a projector on like a bed sheet. And like now it is like a full on production, and like the stage build outs are next level too. They actually move. Speaking of owls,
the stages move.
So Tomorrowland, which is like one in the Netherlands in here, they have another owl as well. They have this giant owl that like in between acts, it's like wings close in on the stage.
Holy
and
shit.
And then like the next act, the wings will like open up. And like reveal the DJ.
Wow.
It's wild. But yeah.
Wow, a big bird reveal.
Yeah, it's some of it is a little corny. Like sometimes it's like, I don't know, you guys like you could do something better with the money sometimes, but
if I see that kind of stuff at a party and the food is lacking, I get very upset because I'm like, who did the budgeting on this event? You know, like this is not,
food first.
Food first. Yes. But if the food is up to par and there's not too many crazy lines and they have the crazy stuff, I'm less judgmental of the crazy stuff. I'm like, well, maybe it's useful. You know?
just because you're like eating great decadent food,
I'll have
it's good.
The bird's arms hold me if I'm full.
Okay. I like the last time we hung out IRL was at an NFT event, and you and I barely even saw the event because we were hanging out eating every type of food of hors d'oeuvres.
Okay, that was the place that had those a fig or something like a grilled cheese.
Yes.
Out of this fucking world. Oh my God.
I was like full, and you guys like, you just have to eat. When I was like, okay. And I'm like eating stuff just cause.
Crazy. No, and they had so the pizza dope. Muffins.
Oh, come on.
Pizza muffins. Yeah. Snacks really do get me.
Oh,
like that is
my
a thing.
Goodness. And back to Chromio, we used to talk about that, about how like fest food was the best food was like our saying, but
nice.
Early Coachella days, like Coachella's catering in the backstage, it still is good. Don't get me wrong, but like it was so decadent. There was like a lobster spread for just anyone to eat like lobster. And it was like, so chef's kiss decadent. Like, yeah, I loved it.
Coachella was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I snuck backstage to Coachella.
Sick.
That was a good time. Pete and Nina Kravitz's trailer.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was really fun. I don't think she knows about that, but
now she does.
But what's up, Nina? Let's go.
That's awesome.
I have a video of it, actually.
Like full on video?
No, I'm like looking in the mirror. It's a funny one.
You can put that B-roll up.
I'll put that B-roll up as well. It was a good time.
A reenactment of it.
Yeah, Coachella was fun. Coachella was always much more of like, but there was a difference between the raves and the festivals. Yeah. Back then. I think now the lines have blurred a lot more. Yes. But back then, going to a hard summer was not the same as going to Coachella. No. Coachella was sick, but Coachella didn't have the Sahara tent yet or that Yucca spot. I don't know. I feel like they probably have more now. Yeah. I haven't been in like 5 years. But those were the two
like dancey,
EDM-y stuff, type spots. And they didn't have those way back when. It was really just like the Mumford Sons type, you know, that was Coachella. Yep. And then Coachella became very ravey. But before, they were such separated things. Mm-hmm. Hard was wild. Insomniac events. I took some of my foreign friends, because I lived in Israel for 6 years. So I met most of my friends are like based just pretty much everywhere. And I had a South African friend and a British friend and someone from, well, who was with us? Singer? Oh yeah. A New Yorker and a San Diegan and a Hong Kongan. and we were all, I took them all to some Insomniac event in, I don't even fucking know, like somewhere out there. And they had the culture shock of a lifetime.
Whoa. Just seeing all those pasties and.
Yeah. And like the fishnets and stuff. They were like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah,
that's awesome.
But that was cool. That was fun. That was a good time.
But you're right, the lines are blurring and they were very separate before. Like the rave culture is that. It's like the leggings, the pasties, like wear nothing.
Yeah.
And Coachella was like floppy hats and like, or like.
Sunflowers.
Cultural appropriation, like headdresses and shit. Yes, like it was a different vibe at Coachella then. But now there's like a blur. I walked around Coachella this year and there's a lot more like rave attire. I think it's became fest attire where it's just like, you kind of like are a little more skimpier. Or dudes with like a shirt off and a backpack vibe.
And the shirt tucked into their short or something. They love doing that. It's fucking hilarious. It's true. It's so funny. I mean, it's cool. So what's cool now to me is a lot of the stuff that I was really into back then was super stigmatized. You know, I went to grad night at Disneyland. I took 4 fucking pills of ecstasy that night alone. Nobody else was with me. It was like my class was there, but nobody wanted to party. Nobody was like down. And I was like, we're at Disneyland in the middle of the fucking night. I'm about to get fucked.
That's dope.
Had so much fun, made so many friends. Like that was a really good time. But that kind of stuff now, not to say that everyone should be taking like a bunch of ecstasy, please don't, okay? Like portion control, guys, and also just don't do it. It's not good anymore. Yeah. And
anymore.
But a lot of that stuff got destigmatized, like mushrooms.
Oh yeah.
Right? Shrooms, psychedelics, I would never speak about that stuff back then. And now everyone's so open.
Yeah.
You know, I used to say like, oh, I did shrooms back then. People would look at me like I'm a psychopath.
Yeah, yeah.
Now every mom and grandma has been taking fucking microdoses every single day to get through their PTA lives.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's so awesome. It's like, it's so funny to
it's
me.
It's good for PTA and PTSD. As much as mushrooms are great for both of
those. Yes. That needs to be your line.
I know, I should actually.
That's a great marketing line. But it's so true. And I think that stems also from how the rave and the festival scenes have blurred now. Ooh. And it's like everything has become so destigmatized. Things are just really all about having fun. There's not as much stigma like on the fact that if you're wearing something skimpier, you must be a slut. Like, or maybe you're just hot because it's 90 degrees in the middle of the desert.
And you're on 6 pills or something. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know? So it is really cool. What do you feel like? What do you feel like has been the takeaway from the trap scene moving into your space now? Because I feel like now you're sort of going back to a different genre. You're moving, obviously you're into Floss 4 now.
Yes.
So how do you feel like you reconcile what's trending and what you want to produce and also what you're known for, which is the trap scene?
That's like a conundrum for me or whatever. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's
probably,
like,
yeah.
Always like, it's hard because like I'll try a lot of times I'll play genres of music I really like in my sets. So like I'll keep doing the trap stuff and playing the stuff that I'm known for, but then I'll tease and play some like drum and bass or some techno or some house. Like I've always played house in my sets, even though the oldest like Floss house stuff was like it was Floss like 1.0. We were making some house stuff. So like I always try to dip my toes in it to try to get my fans more like open to me playing that.
Mm.
But release wise, I've kind of always released trap. Like it's always been like, I'll put a song out and it's trap sounding. And kind of this Floss 4.0 is a mix of all that. I've been making more techno, more drum and bass, in some house as well. And so I'm doing like an EP right now where it is kind of all of that. It's like,
It's a melange.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh, I love that.
Floss 4, the melange.
That might be the Floss name 4, of the album.
The melange. Yo, did I just name the album? Oh my God. Wow.
That's I love great. That. That's
okay, awesome. If you don't name it the album, you should name a section of your garden the melange.
Ooh, okay. What, can you define the word for me? Like,
yeah, it's just a mix. It's like a mix. Yeah, a melange. It's like, if, for example, let's say all of your friends brought weed to a party and you guys wanted to roll a big fat blunt, you know, everybody would put some in and you'd make a melange.
It's an entourage effect is what you're saying.
The melange tourage.
Melange, oh my God. Moulin Rouge tourage.
The melange tourage.
Holy cow.
That is cool. Okay. So you've almost given your fans or your listeners, what do we say? Like, what do we both?
I don't know. Supporters.
Your support. Yes. Yes. Sure. Your community.
Yes.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. Ooh, bring it back to NFTs. You give them like a little bit, or you've given them a little bit of a sample of kind of all of this flavor, if you will, performance wise. And so now you're sort of tying it in with this EP.
Yeah. Yeah.
The vibe.
Yep. That's kind of like what it is with this, with the new EP. Like, and even before,
wait, sorry. What is an EP? I never knew.
I don't know. It's like
an
LP is like, I think 10 songs or something like that. An EP is three to it's more than two, maybe, or maybe it is two.
Wow.
Again, put that in the comments. Let us know what an EP.
I thought an EP was just like one song. I thought it was like a different type of song, like a special song, like a feature.
That would be a single. I don't know, actually. Please let us know what it is.
Great. I'm always I'm about to drop an EP. Never knew what I was saying.
You just say it. It's a melange of songs.
It's a melange.
A melange of songs is actually an LP. An EP is
more of like also a melange of just smaller amounts of songs.
Exactly.
It's a melange light.
It's a melange light. That's actually what an EP is. That's amazing.
It's a melange light, yo. Wow.
Yeah, so I don't even know. Yeah, that's it. I'm putting the melange light out.
Great.
And when I did the, like back in the day before we made EDM Trap, our DJ sets were like Chicago house music and like dance music mixed with like trap songs, like Southern trap songs, Little John, Waka Flocka, whatever. Like our DJ sets were that. So we were on the dance floor when we were out performing, we were mixing those genres together live. And then when we kind of fell off and our career kind of stopped in 2009, we did the same thing we would have done at a show, but did it in the studio. We mixed like dance music with like the trap drums from like the South. And then that's what birthed the genre. So I've been kind of doing similar. I'm like mixing
kind of like the standing desk.
Ooh, yes.
Interesting. Really tying things in together well.
This whole podcast is just callbacks. I love it.
It's great. You have to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you came in right now, please rewind.
Yeah, rewind.
And you'll get the full melange tourage effect of everything.
That is cool. So you brought in what was working for you at your shows, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of what I'm doing now. I'm like trying a bunch of different genres and things now. And then kind of putting that into this EP that I'm doing right now. Yeah.
So are the shows kind of how comedians work through new material at their shows? Are the shows for DJing, that's you working through some new material as well, right?
I got excited because I feel the same way. I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts with comedians on it.
Yeah.
And I also love going and seeing comedy because it's the same thing that we do. Like I've bombed on stage many times. You try a song, you try a mix and you bomb. Like there's these things where you're constantly failing in front of a crowd, but then it helps define your set. Like I'll start out, let's say at the start of the summer with like a new set, new music, new mixes, all of this stuff. And then by the end of the summer, everything's tight. Like every mix flows really well. Like every song selection flows. Like it's just like, for me, I personally do my sets like that. A lot of DJs will just go up and play songs and just vibe, but like I really want to create an experience. And so I feel so much like a comedian where you're like you'll have a set, you'll work on these things, this punchline or this drop or whatever it is for me didn't work here, it did work here. How can I put it later in the set because it works so well here? Let's not blow the load here. Let's put it later. So I don't know. I love that about comedians too, like watching them do it. Especially if I go to the store sometimes and like I'll see maybe the same comedian 1 month later or something.
Yeah, and you see their improvement.
Yes, there's like certain parts of like these jokes that they had that I'll hear it again. I'll know what's gonna, sorry, I might know what's gonna happen.
Hold on. Here, do you want more water?
I'm gonna chug this one. Pardon me. Some melange in my throat. But then, I'll come back and I'll see their whole set. And of course, there's new jokes, but the ones that I heard before are at a different spot. And it's just, I don't know. There's this orchestration that I just really admire with comedy as well as, yeah.
It is cool to see how it can get sharper, how their jokes can get sharper. But I really appreciate a good DJ set. I'm really into psychedelic trance. That's like
love. That was a left field drop. Like, what?
Just like psytrance, there's many left field drops in there. Oh my God. I love psytrance. The reason why I actually stopped really with the rave scene in America was because I fell in love with the nature party scene in Israel. Mm. I mean, in love. The second I went to a nature party, it was like,
can you tell me what a nature party is?
Okay. So a nature party, they have them in Australia, they have them in South Africa, they have them in many, many places, but it's a psychedelic party in the middle of wherever. And they just set it up. It's very low production. You know, you just have like shade, hopefully some water source nearby, maybe like a hose to make the dance floor muddy. Yeah, you bring like a tent. There's no rule. The only rules there with the security usually are like no glass. Although sometimes it's just a makeshift nature party.
Yeah.
But if there is an entrance, it's usually like no glass, and that's pretty much it.
Oh, so there's not even like tickets even? Like you just show up?
You buy tickets, you go, whatever. But it's really casual. Whoa. It's not like here where festivals, there's like a camping area and mm-hmm. this, and you can't bring water and you can't bring, no. No, fuck that shit. You bring whatever you want. You cool. do. You go there. You sit. People are like barbecuing. It's tons of fun. It's so much fun. And it's more of like an acid-y type event, if you will, or like a psychedelic situation. Although you can do MD there. It's so much fun. Or you can be sober. Yeah. I've been at nature party sober loads. Cool. I don't recommend drinking too much alcohol because it's always so hot.
Yeah.
But my friends do get very fucked. If you can handle your liquor, you can. Yeah. But it's so much fun. And the music is 24/7. There's no schedule. It doesn't stop. So the DJs keep going. So no matter what, there's always music playing. Sometimes it's only a 24-hour party. Sometimes it's a few days. But there is no, like, the stage is not live, right? There's no nighttime.
Yeah.
It's just constant. And you can put your tent right next to the fucking stage if you want to. Like wherever you want. And there's different types. There's nature parties that have been at water parks, which are crazy fun. Sick. So you go down these like rides that have these rainbow glowy lights in them. And you're like, oh my God, slides out of this world. So much fun. But psychedelic trance, the thing for me that I connect so much to the music is that it's such a guttural feeling. Mm-hmm. Like when you're there and you're dancing, they call the dancing in, at nature parties digging. I forget what the Hebrew word is, but the idea is to dig. You're there in the dirt and you're literally trying to dig a hole into the ground, essentially with your feet. It's conceptual, obviously, but you are literally doing that. And it's so aggressive and like just free and fun. And it kind of rids a lot of the, I guess like, in Israel, there's so many issues, right? So when you're going to party, you're going to fucking party.
Yeah, escape.
If you want to go for a retreat somewhere and do like an emotional circle, they have those, but that's not a nature party. Mm-hmm. A nature party is fun. You're not going to take drugs in order to like heal yourself and, you know, learn all this shit. You're going there to have so much fun, to release all your energy, to get it all out. And there is no fest attire. The attire is like shreds.
Yeah.
Shreds and like multi-purpose fucking fanny packs with like 10 pockets. And just like, it looked like, I can't even explain, just literal. So it's so much fun. And it's so, to me, it's just so raw and authentic. And there's something that is not replicated when I go into a rave here with like, you know, armbands full of candy that I've been building for like the last like 3 months. And it's fun, don't get me wrong, but it's so not the same.
Yeah, it's just a totally different dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. But wait, to tie it back into the DJ sets. So a really good psytrance set to me, it's like art.
Yeah.
It's fucking art. If you can control the crowd, how you're talking about where you're placing different drops and you're doing different things and you're really negotiating the flow of the fucking vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're the one who's orchestrating it. You're the one who's, that to me is so beautiful. And if you do it well, and then you have like a closing song that really finishes it off, right?
Yeah.
It can be emotional.
Yes.
It can be actually emotional.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, wow.
So anyways, that was a lot.
I'm lost.
Monologue.
In the best way. That's, I love that you've connected to music like that. Like you've had these moments that are like that. They're almost spiritual in a way. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's, that is kind of the cool thing about music in general, like you can just like go and disconnect from whatever problems or whatever drama there is. And even the people around you, you might not like agree with them politically or whatever, but like you're there in this moment and like language doesn't matter. Nothing matters. You're just like connected in that moment. I don't know. I love that about music. It's always done something to me like that.
Yeah.
Even if I just listen to it by myself, it does that. It like makes me like have memories. It'll transport me into place. It'll take me away from whatever I might be dealing with at the time.
Yeah.
Have you found a nature party here?
So I did find, I found like a few here and there. We turned LIB one year into a nature party.
Whoa.
Yeah. We like set up a bunch of speakers by the cars.
Yeah. LIB kind of is like a nature party adjacent.
It is. Like, it's just a much nicer production.
Yeah.
Like it's just, there's so much more to it. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of the vibe. Just way smaller, yeah. And you wouldn't have, you know, you don't be camping like 30 minutes from a stage.
Yeah,
be like,
I know. Right. I know what you mean. Have you ever heard of Shambhala Festival in Canada?
No, but that does sound like a nature party. It's just the name. Yes, that sounds like one.
It's probably the closest thing to what you would expect there.
Do you know Boom in Portugal?
No.
So Boom, that also has house music though and some techno.
Yeah.
But they have like their psytrance stage. It's very much. There are some big ones. Like there's Universo Paralelo in Brazil. Cool. There's like some big ones here and there, but the small ones are so much fun and they happen every fucking weekend. But I really connect to that music. There's something about it. It's hard to explain, but the same, I would say I can appreciate like a really good techno and house set as well.
Yeah.
Really well. Also a trap set. Like just if the set is really good,
yeah,
I resonate.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially if they can get the crowd going.
Yep.
Cause it's hard.
I've said this before and it's kind of corny, I guess, but like the crowd is definitely like a factor in my shows. Like I might play a song that gets them to give an energy off, but then like I feed off of their energy. It's like this reciprocal thing that's happening.
Mm.
Like they're just as much as part of the show as me. Like I know that maybe I'm the conductor up there, but like I need their energy just as much as they need me to give it out, I guess, or give them something. I don't know how to explain it, but there's these moments where it's just this like synergy between me and a crowd. And it like, they're part of the show. Seriously. If it's even if it's like 10 people in a sweaty room or it's thousands of people at a festival. If there's that like energy happening, it makes it be like some of the most memorable sets for me. And I'm sure for them as well. Like,
absolutely. Oh yeah. I have specific parties that I'll never forget. Like Damian Lazarus played at the Block in Tel Aviv.
Ooh.
In the smoking room.
What's that mean?
So the main room you can't smoke in.
Oh.
And then there's like the small room, which you can. And so it's much smaller, but like it was, that was just I'll never forget that one. Nina Kravitz played till 12 p.m. one day.
Where'd you pee though? Did you pee in your trailer afterwards?
I didn't, although I really should have. All right, this has been awesome. This has been just so incredible. Flostradamus, ladies and gentlemen. Kurt, you're just like such a wonderful human being. Thank you for driving out, coming out.
No, thank you for having me.
We got to wrap up with all of your amazing products here because I really want to hear about these projects. I feel like they're, really quickly, Chase and Status. Do you know them?
Yeah.
They're doing Twitter spaces.
Really?
And I know that you're an active social audio person. I want to get involved in those.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are they doing on them? Just like
they're doing like a lead up to some music that they're releasing, I believe.
Whoa.
Having a little resurgence right now.
That's cool. Are they like playing the music on it or something?
They're talking about it. They're talking about like each album they produce and stuff. It's pretty cool.
I'm going to follow them if I'm not on Twitter and check that out.
Yeah. So, okay. Back to these wonderful products. Talk about them. What are the different companies? This is a separate one, right? And then this one also?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just do a quick little light shill on it.
I like mushrooms, so you can get specific.
Okay. We'll get specific. Oh my goodness. Yeah, so this is my company, Mindhoney, and we actually sell these in GNC, and we sell pills of it, too. These are the drinks.
Okay, cool.
So if you want, you can go to GNC, ask them for Mindhoney, all over the place. And so these are drinks that are mushroom-based drinks. So each drink has its own type of tea as well as its own type of mushrooms. So just for example, like we have adaptogens in this one, as well as like lion's mane, reishi, cordyceps mushrooms. And so that's what this one is.
Reishi's the calming one, right?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Exactly.
Great. Cool.
And they're all pretty good for your immunity too, in a way. Like it's not medical advice, but they do help out there. Yeah.
Well, you got me through COVID with your vitamin
Oh, you did? Did you try a little bit of the, some of those things?
I got pretty much all of them. I even got that sick Irish moss situation. Oh, you got
that? That was yeah, a, that was yeah, an add-on.
Yeah, I didn't even know. Yeah, that was an add-on. I didn't get that in the list, but I still bought it.
No, it's supposed to be good for you. I don't know. Do, everything I sent you, just Google it and check it out.
Yeah,
I'm sure you took it, but
yeah. Yeah, cool stuff. Okay, so this, but this is not psychedelic for people.
Yeah,
to know.
So this is non-psychoactive, and, right? But you can get this, and it's nootropic. It's good for studying. It's good for working out. All of that type
GNC
of stuff.
GNC is not there yet, but they will be soon.
That's the thing. That's what we're hoping. Yeah. And then, so yeah, for the people, the psychonauts that are trying to explore a little bit more on psychedelic side, but also this is in such a low dose. This is a microdose. This is Rise and Shine. This is the very similar things that are in the drinks, but there's also an added ingredient, psilocybin,
right,
which is a psychoactive chemical. It's kind of like serotonin in our brains, but this has just done so much good for me during the pandemic. I like being depressed and being at home, like taking these, it kind of like kept me in a good mood, and it kind of just like, it shed a lot of that weird depression. It makes things just a little bit lighter and a little bit easier, that over time it kind of like just makes me more calm and not so upset over like little things. Like I noticed during the pandemic too, I was getting frustrated over every little thing. I was cooped up in my house. I'm sure a lot of people can relate.
Agitated.
Yeah. Very agitated. Yeah. And you know, like this new thing will come up on the news and like there'll be riots, there's things happening. And it just made me upset all the time. And I would get involved with everything too. I'd be like, I have an opinion too. And like, and of course I do. And I want to support as much as I can, but it was actually like affecting me physically and making me mad. And even interactions with my parents and people that I love, like, this girlfriend I had at the time, we'd get in arguments over stuff and it just wasn't needed. Anyway, a lot of this psilocybin has helped me with that. It like makes me like not sweat the little things, and
that's good.
I don't know, kind of lead with love. I know it sounds hippie, but like, it's like very, I don't know, even my negative self-talk that I have, that everyone probably has, is that it like makes me actually process like the things that I would normally say negative to myself in like a kind of loving way. So that's why. That's
more forgiving of yourself, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of gratitude in there instead of negative energy.
Well, I think that's really important. And, you know, any negative self-talk you have should really, it should fuck off, because you're such a wonderful human being. You have an incredible ambiance. You've always been so welcoming and kind.
Thank you.
And, you know, in a city of people who can often be inauthentic, it's hard to find that. And I, you know, I say this on the podcast a lot, so I feel like people are like, Sean, you stop talking about that. But it's just really true. Mm-hmm. And it's why I value so many of my friends here. And I really, really appreciate them, because there's something super special about being able to find authentic people in LA.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that, by the way. I feel the same way about you. Like, we've only had a few interactions, but like, it's always been good. Like, always. I gravitate toward those type of people, but same with you. Like, we just like bonded instantly. Like, there's like this like, all right, we kind of speak the same language, even though we just like are meeting or whatever. We like kind of understand each other. Mm. We'll go eat snacks on the side.
It's and all
just
about
like,
the snacks, guys.
No, but no, it's like, it's just like, we're not about the, if we were about that quote unquote LA shit, we probably would have been in with the NFT people and schmoozed and did all of that. But no, we're like about just some real shit. Let's go have a real experience over here. And I love that. Like, it was, yeah.
Yeah. You know, something you actually said, we will wrap after this, but something you did say that, I think it was on a Twitter space or something, about how NFT parties need more feminine energy.
Yeah.
I thought that was really awesome.
Yes.
Because I agree with that. Can you just give us a little bit of that? Explain that, elaborate slightly, because it's such an interesting concept that I don't know if people are really touching on.
It's just, I mean, it's a masculine, it's, I don't know how, I don't even know how to describe it, but like NFTs are very masculine driven, very like.
Bro.
Well, it like, think about it. Like, we're in a patriarchal capitalist society. Like, it, like, and NFTs are like the most like capitalist like thing to do. And NFTs are based in crypto and all this stuff. So it already brings in that kind of repeated mindset of like, all right, I'm going to flex something. I'm going to, like, it's just all very, I don't know, capitalist, patriarchal, in my opinion. I could go deeper into that, but what I noticed when I started going to the events is there was like no women there, really. It was very low feminine energy there. It was very masculine energy. I know I sound hippie talking about mushrooms and feminine and masculine, but it just felt that.
Well, you do have a garden.
True.
You fucking keep bees. So.
Yeah, maybe
hippie,
I have a
little, hippie you are.
Yes, I know. Guilty as charged. But I just noticed that it was like, it wasn't that inviting feminine energy that ironically in DJing and DJing 101 is like, you have to get the girls on the dance floor. And I noticed when I would go to a DJ events, there are a lot of girls there. There's a lot of that feminine energy, and it creates a party, and it creates an inviting environment. Like feminine energy always does. It creates this inviting, it's safe energy.
Welcoming, nurturing.
Yes, yeah. Yes, all
yeah.
of those.
Yeah.
And I noticed in NFTs, it wasn't that. It was like very cold and push back at the event side of things. And like on Twitter spaces and Clubhouse and stuff, you don't really feel that necessarily until you're like IRL and you like actually experience it. And to me saying that in a Twitter space is, yeah, there needs to be more feminine energy in this space. And that is on the creation side, as well as just like on the community side, like just, I think more, I don't know what it'll take. I don't know if it takes women to bring more women in. Cause I don't think us dudes can be like, yo, you girls got to get in here. I don't know what it, like, I don't know what, yeah. I don't know how to solve the problem. I just know it needs to be solved. And I know that it should just, it'll change things. It'll change the way the art looks, the way the drops are, the way everything is. Right now it's just so like cold and I don't know. It just needs to change, just like everything.
I have a hard time racking my head around some of the things in the NFT community space, especially when it comes to this idea of money being so intertwined with the art. Because, you know, as someone who's obviously, I'm related to many talented artists, you know, I get kind of insulted when I hear these Twitter spaces and I can hear someone like fluffing up their care for the artist just for clout. Yeah. And you fucking know. Mm-hmm. Like, get the hell out of here. Oh, it's all about the artist. Really? Really? How many projects have you flipped recently? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, how many, like, how much are you actually looking into the artist before you're buying into these projects? Like, I doubt it, you know? And it can be a really frustrating thing for me when I've just seen, you know, I know the struggle of an artist. I've seen it so clearly firsthand.
That's awesome.
And it's whether it's their process or the business aspect or whatever it is, there's so much there. And so I do find that hard. It's hard to reconcile that part. And I think that also kind of ties into a lack of feminine energy as well, because there's a lack of care. It's more of a quick flip, a financial this, or whatever, you know, let's ROX this or whatever, 10X this, ROI 10X this kind of a, kind of a vibe, as opposed to like really buying and collecting and appreciating and feeling what you're supposed to be feeling when you're looking at this piece. You know, a lot of people, I mean, you're selling before reveal. So, you know, if you're selling pre-reveal, are you really buying it for the art?
Yes.
I don't think so.
I love that you're saying all of this. Like, in full honesty, I don't do the buy and sell flip NFT stuff.
I did it for 24 hours and I lost money.
I guess a similar thing. Like, I bought into a project too. Like, I was like, okay, cool. Maybe it's like someone was like, oh, they're going to get put on Binance or whatever. I was like, okay, I'll get in on it. But that was like kind of it too. It was just like, I'm done with it. And I actually started a company called Liberated, and it's all about like doing really good things in NFTs. Like,
nice.
I'm trying to actually build the tools and actually make it so artists like your sister or whatever can put out their art through this. And it actually is about the art. It is about the experience of the art even too. Like the way that we could even do her drop is more of an experience, let's say.
Yeah.
Instead of like, just doing the like capitalist style of what it is. And I just think that it might've been your boy Gary Vee. I don't know who it was, but we're in a gold rush now. Your boy.
That's my boy right there.
We're in a gold rush right now, and there's gold rush behavior. And that's just what's happening right now.
Gold rush behavior.
Yes. Like that's what's happening right now in the NFT space. And it's starting to die down. I think once things started to get a little messed up over the past few, I guess it's a month now, when like the market crashing and stuff, it's starting to get a lot of that out, which is cool. And I think now we can rebuild. Like when a lot of the like stock market crashed, like a lot of the big tech companies came out of that, like the Ubers and things like that came out of like, they say bear markets or whatever. Mm. So right now we're in a bear market. I think a lot of the good stuff can come out of it. And we need more feminine energy right now in to bring it back with like a loving energy and not like a capitalist, like gold rush energy.
Yeah, I can't agree with that more. I love that you're doing that with Liberated. What's the info for that? Where can people check that out? Is there a way to get involved?
Yeah. I mean, well, involved, I guess it's just me and a small team.
Okay.
It's LBR8TD, Liberated. Liberated.
Okay, and great. Skate, great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just, it works out that way.
Yeah.
I locked in all the socials, so you can find me on Instagram there, Twitter, liberated.com, cool. LBR8TD.com. And the first drop we're doing is my friend Aryeh, which is a Hebrew name.
Yes. I listened to your guys' podcast.
Oh, dope.
On that show.
Okay, cool. So
he's super cool.
He's so cool.
And I need to come to one of these Shabbat dinners.
And you should come to one.
Can I please?
No, seriously.
I'm like so down.
I will invite you. They're actually really cool, because I am like an honorary Jew because of them. Like
yes. I've been meaning to say, you're a Jewcent.
adjacent.
Yes. So I wanted to say that on the.
Ironically, there's some adjacent in here. No, I am. I'll take adjacent. Anyway, so for him, that's the thing with what liberated is, like, we're just doing, I got close, I'm sorry.
It's fine.
You can turn me down.
I'll turn you back up. We read it out a bunch. Yeah. We'll mess around with it.
You know, if you're not redlining, you're not headlining, you know? That's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
It's a DJ. Wow. It's a DJ thing.
Me and Leah's episode was headlined all over.
it's just a story.
One big headline. That was what that was.
That's
no
awesome.
Opening acts.
No opening acts, just pure headliners.
No opening acts.
I love that. Okay. But yeah, for Arye's drop, he took a photo of himself every day for 10 years and in photo booth, like on his computer. And he was like, he produces music right now. He's kind of broke because like it's hard to make money in music.
Yeah, of course.
And like, and he was like, I was talking with him, I'm like, dude, you have these photos. We should make these into NFTs. Like, I'm like connected to the NFT space. And I was like, well, let me take this on as like almost like a test project for Liberated. Like, how can we do this? How can we do this drop in a way that Liberated would do it? How can we do it in a way that no one else has done it? So like what he did is he has every single one of these photos he took in photo booth. So what we did is we actually recreated OS X, like the actual desktop.
Oh, cool.
And you mint the NFTs in a photo booth. Like there's like an actual photo booth.
Oh, cool.
You come up and then you actually mint it, you connect your wallet. And then when you click the photo booth, then you get one of his NFTs, which is really cool. It's like, it feels like OS X. You can even play his music in a Spotify that comes up and it has like the dock. It's just like a, just kind of a fun experience. And then for the mobile site, we actually made it be like OS or iOS. So if you like mint it through iOS, you can actually like play it all through iOS too.
Wait, that's so fucking sick.
It's fun. It's just,
that's cool.
That's like light what we're doing for Liberated, but like we're just, I just, when I did my little vape, my little smokable NFT thing, like,
which was super dope, by the way.
Thank you. I just wanted it to be an experience. Like I
was in that drop, you know, in Clubhouse.
You were?
Yeah, in Clubhouse.
No way.
Yeah, I was in that drop. I was on the stage.
Oh my God. Yeah, yeah, that makes,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause I'm friends with Joey and Rachel.
Yes, that's right. We actually talked about that. That you knew them. I didn't know you were in that room though too.
Yeah. I was in that room. I remember it. Cause I was very hesitant with all the NFT stuff. I was just making fun of it.
Yeah, of course.
As a jokester that I am all over Clubhouse.
Yeah.
But I saw the smokable.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit.
Cool. Thank you.
It's like, let's go.
That's cool.
So yeah, that was really fun.
Well,
the hunt and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The hunt. Like, it's kind of back to the mushroom
hunting.
Vividly
remember
thing.
That. Yeah.
That's
cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of what it is. Like all the stuff you had experienced was it created an experience. Yeah. The NFT can be worth whatever it's going to be worth and it's going to, whatever, there's going to be something there, but experiences are also worth something. And we were talking about multiple times in this podcast, the way you were describing, like going to those psytrance events, like you like went there when you were talking to me about it. I got lost. I went there with you.
I went there.
But
I'm actually exhausted. I have a hangover already. Wow.
It's cause you took these pills. I saw you go there because it meant so much to you and it transported you. That experience you had there probably took you to the spot that you like keep going back to nostalgically. So I want to do that with the NFT space. I don't want it just to be like, all right, you got to go on Discord and get on the whitelist and do this and do all the cliche
fuck
things.
That shit.
Like, no, there's like no whitelist and like you have to do all these like fun things to make the experience worth something. Cause even if your shit rugs out and you make zero money on it, if that's what you are in NFTs for is to make money. And if you make zero money, you can at least remember that experience. Like, oh, there's a scavenger hunt where Floss like hid the seed phrase to a wallet and the audio and all this, like it makes it just like a little more memorable. And yeah, I don't know. I just want to do that with what I'm doing with Liberated. We're doing it with this Arye drop. And the next drop that I'm going to do is like that scavenger hunt type thing. But like, it's going to be like game changing, like seriously, like it's going to be,
oh, another scavenger hunt. Yes.
But like,
ooh, oh my God.
But I know that it's not just a scavenger hunt.
I need to put my detective hat on.
No, it's going to be, no, seriously. It's like I've invented technology that will probably be used in NFTs moving forward,
which is kind of crazy. Up. That's
like,
fucking
I'm super
sick.
Stoked. I can tell you off air.
Can you,
but like,
okay. Fine.
Yeah,
I was going to say,
yeah, I can't, cause I don't want to like
risk it.
Well, I mean, someone can do it, but it's more of the way that this drop is going to happen. It needs to have like no. I can't show the cards right now.
Right. It has to be elusive.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Sick. That sounds so much. That sounds amazing. I agree that when we're in a bear market, it's the time to build, and it's kind of the opportunity to like get rid of a lot of the clout. There's like this huge, I don't know what it is about people. They don't like to be honest or self-aware about chasing their dreams in a way that they think is like off-putting.
Yeah.
Like, okay, if I'm going to an event to network, I'm going to go fucking network. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to be like up on a Twitter space, I went on stage on a New York Times Twitter space to ask a question about Joe Rogan, absolutely with the intention to gain followers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yep. And also to provoke, because what the fuck are these bullshit New York Times people talking about? They don't know shit. And I wanted to ask a really relevant question and I knew it was going to gain me some traction.
Dope.
So I did that and I'm fine saying that. But there's like this thing in the NFT space and this Clubhouse space. And listen, I was early on Clubhouse. I saw this resetting the room, follow all the mods. Like this was like my, it just gave me the biggest headache in all the world. Mm-hmm. But it's like this thing in NFTs. People like to pretend like they're not in it for the clout ever. Mm-hmm. And it's so fucking weird because it's so blatantly obvious. It's like you're in media. Why aren't you in it for the, like, why aren't you doing, why aren't you going to speak at events and do that for the recognition and for the B-roll and for the this? And like, that's what you should be doing. So if you're pretending like you're just there to be some authentic leader of this tech movement, but you don't even know a single language of code or you haven't seen Ready Player One or like anything, you know what I mean? Like, if you're not even at all infatuated with the space, but you're, it's okay to do that. And it's okay to be honest about that. And I hope people are more honest about it because it, I resonate with that more when I hear people talk like that. Yeah. And I think it's like, I gravitate to that authenticity. And I feel like what's happening now with the bear market is a shedding of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like the Twitter spaces are far more casual these days. Yes. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yes.
I like it a lot.
Yes.
So I don't know. You gave me a little optimism as well today. And I'm hoping that it, like, you know, it does change something in the space because there are, I mean, it is pretty fucking, it's an awesome space. I've met some of the best people ever. Obviously you, so many really cool humans through it. And the real ones you can see.
Yes.
You can see from a mile away.
Yep. And since you've been in this for so long, the 1.5 years or whatever it's been popping, like you've seen so many different iterations of what it is. I think that we're just like, we're publicly failing and learning what this is together. Like all of us are like, and so like being in part of this, you're going to, well, there's going to be all these growing pains, but it isn't like behind the scenes. It's like in front of everyone. And so all of this is going to be awkward, but we're going to do it together. And hopefully it takes shape. Hopefully it has more of a feminine energy, a welcoming energy. And it actually is something that more people like are using, or maybe not, who knows what it'll be, but, or it might evolve into something else. But the people that we have met here is so, it's so awesome. I met some of the coolest people in this space. I met some weird people too.
I have met some weird
There's
people.
There's a lot of weird people too, but I've also met some really cool people. And it's me personally, I'll end my rant on NFTs with this. Like, the reason why I call my company Liberated is because I genuinely felt liberated when this shit came along. I was doing the music stuff for 15, 16 years at that time, doing Floss. And I was like, it was hard for me to just like find inspiration. I was like, I just don't want to like sit in front of Ableton and make EDM trap again. Like it just was like hard for me to do this thing.
Yeah.
And the NFT space, I was able to do the fun creative shit I could do when I first started doing Floss again. And it just made me feel liberated. It made me feel good. It made me feel like I was like young and creative again. And I get to meet really cool people and there's a new scene and everyone's open to any idea. Like there, it was just like very open and welcoming. And I wasn't feeling that in dance music for a while. And so that's what this NFT space did for me, because now I'm actually really stoked to make music again. It made me like get that passion back that I had lost by doing the same thing in music over again. I was able to like get passion doing something fun and creative elsewhere and come back to music and like really enjoy this again. So that's why I called it Liberated, but that's why I really like fuck with NFTs in this space and Web3 and all of that. So
it reignited that creativity.
It did. I needed something and NFTs were the thing. The pandemic plus NFTs were that.
A nice combo.
Yeah. And the bees. Maybe.
Created a melange.
Yeah.
Oh, an entourage effect.
Exactly.
Wow. Guys, thank you so much. Floss, quick shill. Where can people find you? What's your handles?
Yeah. Just try to Google Flossdradamus and it'll probably fix it.
I hope you guys can Google.
It starts with an F. Go over there. Floss. Tradamus. And then there's the .coms, the merch, the...
Tradamus is the hardest part to spell.
Figure that out. Just type in F-L-O-S-S. And then bash the keyboard, starting with the letter T.
I always spell it wrong. I'm not going to lie. There's times when I'm... Because the tra-da, I always think that there's an extra U in there after the D-A. And then, I had to be really careful with that. I was... I'm not spelling your name.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You just kind of kept swiggling.
Yes, I just did.
The quotes are actually part of it when you Google it. You have to put the quotes in there.
Oh, are the quotes in there?
No.
I just are like, they not? No. Well, you should. It should be a quote.
Funny thing about my name. So my dad, not that long ago, finally got on Facebook. So like he's like pretty new to Facebook, which is so funny.
Tell him he's and still early. Yeah, he's still early.
He raised an early adopter and tech son, but oh my goodness. But the reason why I said this is he thought the status bar was a search bar for like days. First thing he typed in, find a friend. So my dad's first status on Facebook is find a friend.
Shut up. We need B-roll of this.
I'll send it to you. And then the second thing he typed in is a misspelling version of my name. It's like Floss Tard. T-A-R-D-M-U-S. Maybe there's like an A in there too, a random A.
I'm glad he also struggles with it. Yes. I'm really glad.
You guys have something in common.
Yeah, when I meet him, we'll bond over this.
Exactly.
I'll be like, so, how do you spell Floss Tard?
Actually, he just has struggles spelling anything. But
that's hilarious.
Yeah, so anyway, that was the Facebook thing. But yeah, don't do what my dad did. Or actually do what he did. Spell it wrong. Put it on Google.
You'll
still find it. And then Liberated is my other company, LBR-ATD, all these other mushroom things, Rise and Shine, Smile, Mindhoney, check them out.
When's the REA drop again?
REA drop is this week.
Oh, okay, sick. Yes, I don't know if this will be up. It might be. We'll see.
Well, if it isn't, what do you think? Do you know?
I mean, it could be up. I never know. Sometimes I feel really motivated and sometimes I'm like, nah.
You do that too. Yeah. I think we all do that.
Oh my God. Creatives. I mean, we have no schedule. I'm supposed to release episodes on Tuesday, but then I just change all my descriptions to weekly.
Oh, smart.
Yeah.
It's funny. We all struggle with that. Even us trying to do this podcast, I think it was three times.
But you know what? I'm really glad we canceled.
I am too.
Because the other times I wasn't ready and also I was really sick still.
You were.
I was still like not
I'm happy to see you healthy. I hope you're healthy right now. I don't know.
But my sister was like, are you really going to do the episode tomorrow? And I'm like,
no, you were like, do you want to do it? I was like, I could.
I was like, I mean, you can, but it worked out. Not a good time. But yeah, anyways, thank you so much for coming on, Kurt. You're great. So I'll figure it out. If I upload it before... Yeah. Well, okay. If I upload it after the drop, where can they go? Will you send me like the links for before and after? If I upload it before, I'll ask you for it and then I'll put the before ones. If it's after, I'll put the after ones.
How about I'll just drop the website. It's dothismyself.com
I really like that.
He made a song called Do This Myself that we put all of the images in and made like a music video out. And the song is called Do This Myself. And the website is dothismyself.com. Check it out. Even if the drop is sold out, see that we like recreated OSX and you can mint through a virtual OSX. It's really fun.
I have like such an urge to tell him to do it yourself.
I'm
like, no, you do it yourself.
Yeah, you do it yourself.
Fucker, I'm not doing it myself. All right. Thank you so much. What a great episode.
Seriously, thank you.
Yes, this was awesome. Ooh.